Hello, everybody. I'm here with John Anthony yet again. How are you, John?
I'm doing good, Ryan. And about yourself?
I'm doing well, thank you. And switching back to our original platform, utilizing Zoom, because I have some things in mind for this project, but we'll get to that later. John, I was thinking about something this weekend.
That's good.
It's a story. It's a story that. So here's what happened. Monica went away on a girls' weekend trip, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, she comes home and we're decompressing. The kids are asleep. So naturally, it's my obligation as her husband to act interested and ask her how she enjoyed the weekend and if she enjoyed it at all. And she says, yes, she did. So she says that she did. This is a group of girls that she went to college with. They shared a house together. Like, they weren't dorm mates. I didn't stay in a dorm. Dorm mates, they didn't stay, you know, to a dorm or anything like that. Like, they rented a house together for a couple years in college after their first year. So, as you can imagine, living in close quarters during some very important years of their lives, definitely some transition going on mentally, physically, whatever the case may be. Emotions run high, right? Whether it be the stress of college, stress of figuring out the world, your parents are putting stress on you. They have, you know, a dream for you, and they want you to meet these expectations, and they're very vocal about how they want you to meet these expectations, whatever, right? I'm just trying to point out how the stress can set in. But one thing I thought about is that the trauma that we face as individuals, we talk about this all the time, the trauma that we face as individuals can affect us throughout our entire lives. Now, people are kind of like, well, yeah, buddy, you're telling us something that we already know. But I never saw it this way until this past weekend. So long story short, Monica said that there was quite a few arguments this past weekend, right? So they showed up and one girl actually went out of her way to say, I don't want any of you thinking you're better than me because I don't have a husband or kids. And everybody was kind of like, well, we weren't thinking that, right? To me, that's some sort of trauma right there. Let me go on. And then she continues going on and on and on. And she says, Monica, we've already, so-and-so, there's two people, I'm not going to name them. So-and-so made a list with me on the way up here about how you've said mean things to me over the years. Monica's reply, right? And I kind of said this to her, or I did say this to her, not kind of. Monica's reply was, oh yeah? Well, if you three have something to say about me, spill it out right here, right? And in listening to this conversation and how things went over the weekend, I thought to myself, wow, instantly, all of these girls reverted back to who they were in college. Does that make sense? Now, you know, I'm no psychoanalyst, but I was like, it sounds like you all were back in your house in college and, you know, you're all 21 years old again and you're not addressing things the way that you would if you were in the workplace or with your in-laws or something like that, right? So many thoughts going on about this interaction over the last weekend. And I'm just, you know, I was like, I wanted to talk to John about trauma. And, you know, we always make it a point to reconcile with family. I think it's important to reconcile with friends. So I'm talking a lot. I'll give you a chance to speak here on what you're gathering off of these initial comments.
Well, certainly trauma plays a role in our life, but the first thing that came to mind for me was projection. It sounded to me like that person was thinking about, you know, looking at themselves, how they were looking at themselves. You know, they don't have a partner, you know, they don't have children. And it sounds to me like they were looking down on themselves and then possibly projecting that onto what other people are thinking of them because they're thinking it of themselves.
And she's surrounded by wives and with kids and maybe some people, you know, they're not comfortable. They think that they have to be able to keep up with the conversation or appearances, if you will.
Yeah. And some people don't want children and some people don't want a partner that they're attached to. But if you do want children and you do want a partner and you don't have one, it's going to be real hard for that person to give themselves the "Are you a cat?" that they need. How they're still a lovable person and how there's nothing wrong with where they are. It's just where they are. See, but if you're not able to give yourself that respect or understanding, you know, the acceptance, caring, appreciation, or trust, what we call "Are you a cat?" then you're going to be in your fear. And the fear of losing something or the fear of not getting something. So I think that is a dynamic that is, you know, certainly filling up somebody's emotional cup. And then when you add to it dynamics that played out, you know, and, you know, it sounds like what you said, you know, years in the past, you know, in the past years, things were said on Facebook or something. And so those are wounds. You know, hurt feelings that weren't addressed and dealt with, you know, and, you know, so often with wounds, what's happening is that we're looking for that love in the form of the "Are you a cat?" from somebody else. And they didn't give it to us, or we didn't think they gave it to us. And maybe they didn't. But the reason I'm in pain is because I'm not giving it to myself, because if somebody else doesn't give me that love, that doesn't mean I'm not lovable. It says something about that other person's ability to love or to not love. But we often make things be about us because since we were a toddler, you know, and really an infant, but we don't start to recognize things, you know, till we're toddlers, but the whole world is about us. And that's a very natural phenomenon that occurs in our emotional development. You know, everything that is happening to me. I'm the only one that's going through this. And we grow up with that, with the whole world, you know, looking at ourselves like everything is happening to me. And when we get older, you know, 16, 17, we're capable of being able to see that other people have problems too. And it's not just me. It's not always about me. And then as we get older, we're able to give ourselves that "Are you a cat?" and that love. And then to see that it's really about that that person. It's not about me. And so if we're not able to make that emotional growth in our life, then we're going to be vulnerable. And when we have wounds that we haven't healed, we're going to be vulnerable. And they keep getting bumped into. And it's painful, but the pain is really because of what I'm thinking about me or what I'm thinking they're thinking about me. And I'm causing that pain, and I don't realize that I'm doing it. And we're blaming the other person, and we're not seeing that, no, it's really something I need to heal. Because just because you think I'm not lovable doesn't mean I'm not lovable.
But right.
Go ahead.
Sorry, what I was going to say was that I was definitely took in that whole part of it, but like I was so interested in the entire weekend because Monica just listed that as one detail. So that's one thing, right? That the young lady made that comment about, like, you know, don't think you're better than me and this, that, and the other thing. But then what I was also thinking about, like, as Monica explained it, and she explained it with some body language as well, right? I was like, you know, you have done so much work in on your own. I'm talking to Monica emotionally and developed tools and this, that, and the other thing. But suddenly you're Monica from college all over again as well. And I said that to Monica. I was like, oh, you know, let's be honest. You've told me stories that you were kind of the authoritarian, like, is that the word authoritarian? chopping up my words.
That's a word. I'm not sure if that's the one you mean.
But she was, you know, she was like, well, you know, I had to, you know, monitor the thermostat. I had to monitor the bills. Somebody had to. And I was like, all right, well, let's be honest. As you've told me these stories, and you were a very different person when I met you, and I was a very different person when you met me, and we've grown and we developed skills and enhanced our communication skills. But your friends have not got the chance to take that journey with you the way I have. Does that make sense? So even though we've managed to build skills, we're able to function in a completely different way in our lives and handle stress and emotional pain and things like that, handle it in a very different way. Those girls haven't taken the journey with her, and she hasn't taken it with them. Right. So in my, like I said, in my head, I was just like amazed. Like I was just like thinking about the whole thing. Like we can come so far in our lives, but then we meet up with people who we knew at a different time in our lives, we're kind of all still stuck in the moment a little bit. Now, granted, we have the ability to utilize the tools we've learned, but sometimes without thinking, you know, the same thing can be said about when we meet up with old friends. We're in high school again. We're in college again. We're back on that property we worked out together. It's just, it's very easy to head back to the last place you all knew each other, if that makes sense.
Well, it can be, yes. See, and it may not have anything to do with whether or not the person or the people have developed emotionally, because Monica has developed emotionally. But when she got into that dynamic, she reverted back to her old way of being when she was around them. And they could have developed emotionally, but when they got back into that dynamic, they reverted to who they were emotionally. So the example that I always talk about, you know, when I was in my 20s, you know, I moved away and I was on my own. And when I would come home to visit my family, they would treat me like I was little Johnny. And I used to resent that they treated me like little Johnny, because I was an adult, you know, I had my own life. But it took me a while before I realized that not only did they treat me like I was little Johnny, I acted like I did when I was little Johnny. The way that I would numb out or shut down or not say anything, I was doing that just like I did with them when I was in high school. And so it's not that we haven't developed, but sometimes when we get back into a certain routine or we get around certain people where we, you know, they see us a certain way, you know, when they're trying to tell me, my parents are trying to tell me what to do, you know, I'm in my fear. And then I resorted to the way I dealt with my fear when I was in high school, as opposed to how I deal with my fear as an adult. And it's because we haven't healed that wound, that we are more susceptible to falling back into it. And so, yeah, that's very, very possible, especially if people haven't seen each other for a while and now they're interacting. And, you know, so it's.
But isn't it made me think that.
See,
like,
one more thing. See, it's not only a conscious memory, but our body remembers things and our emotional body remembers things. So a lot of times, you know, when we've had hurtful things, we're reacting to that emotional body memory or that physical body memory. And it's not necessarily even conscious to us. We just fall back into it. So that's how trauma affects us. And there's different degrees of trauma.
Yeah. So I was just thinking that it was very interesting to me that just how easy it is to fall back in. How am I trying to say this? Through my healing, the work I've done on myself, I reflect on like pretty much every part of my life, right? And some people might think, well, that sounds very time consuming and exhausting. And it is and it isn't, because there's points in my life that stick out to me, right? Where I wasn't so kind to somebody, or they weren't so kind to me. And I made it a point to reach out to people and say, one example would be my friend George Bernite, where we were inseparable for years. And life took over. Alexis was born. George and everybody else went off to college and started that chapter in their lives. And I, you know, so, you know, sometimes things just change. You don't think about it, right? Like we think that it's going to be this life altering moment when we stop seeing someone or stop going somewhere. And that may happen, but sometimes it just happens and you just move on, right? You just move on to the next day, the next task. And suddenly you're like, oh, I haven't seen that person in a while. But the point I'm trying to make is that all these years later, after doing this healing and working on myself, I reached out and I was like, George, how are you? I'm good. How are you, man? How's the family? Family's beautiful, back and forth, right? And then I was like, listen, I'm not, I don't want to beat around the bush. The reason I'm reaching out is because I've done a lot of work on myself over the last few years. And I just wanted to tell you that I know I wasn't a very good friend all the time. And I want to apologize for acting any sort of way or acting disrespectful towards you when you didn't deserve it, when it wasn't necessary, when it was uncalled for. And I'm really sorry about all that. And it's like, oh, thanks, man. You know, it's, you know, and even though he plays it off kind of like, oh, we were kids, like, I appreciate that, you know, let's all meet up soon. I feel better. Does that make sense? And where I'm going with this is I think there's maybe room for Monica and her friends to, I don't even want to say apologize, but discuss things, right? Perhaps if Monica's friend had said, you know, Monica, I just, you know, I want to talk to you. Back in college, you did this and did that. And, you know, I didn't really like it. And, you know, I know it's years later, but I just want to communicate that you made me feel that way. How would Monica approach it, right? Most likely. And again, she would probably say, you know, reply. Monica would probably reply, yeah, you know, I'm very sorry that you felt that way. That wasn't my intention. You know, I was young. I was going through a lot. You were young. We were all going through a lot. And I apologize if I made you feel that way, right? But that's not how it started. It was, we made a list of things that you've said to me. And then Monica reverts into her defense mode. And there's no, it's not productive, right? So
yeah,
I'm going on a rant here, but I'm talking about how.
Yeah, see, it's not productive because.
Yeah, help me tie it up.
Because the person's using you statements, they're not talking about their experience. The other thing is what you were talking about, what you did with your friend, you know, that's, you know, one of the steps, you know, the 12 steps, you know, making amends, you know, and you don't have to just make amends for the things you did when you were on drugs or alcohol. You can make amends for other reasons too. And another factor is that you worked on that for a long time before you thought about going and talking to that person. Well, maybe they've numbed out to it, or they distracted themselves, or, you know, and you all of a sudden come in and you're in a more healed place and they're not, because they haven't even been looking at it. So you catch them off guard, you know, and they may be polite, you know, and, or maybe they have already healed it, you know, but, you know, they haven't been looking at that the same way that you have.
Right.
And see, and so, and then if you were to try to attempt that with, say, what you're talking about with Monica and her friends, just because she wants to do that doesn't mean that they're ready to do it or that they're willing to do it, because they may be holding on to their grievances because they had an expectation or role that they wanted her to take on and she didn't. And they've been harboring that for all these years. And, you know, so there's all kinds of dynamics that play into this, and you can't, expect that somebody's just, you know, because I'm, hey, I'm ready to heal all this. Let's go and let's heal it. It could happen, you know, if everybody's done work on their own and then you bring it up and if everybody took responsibility for their part and they didn't point fingers about what the other person did, then it's possible. But as soon as we start doing the you statements and pointing fingers about what the other person did, it's going to be, I'm going to feel attacked. And then I'm going to be more likely to be in my fear or my shame about what they're accusing me of. And it's, remember, it's fear of losing something or not getting something. It doesn't have to be fear of physical safety. And then I turn my fear to anger, and then I get angry at them, or I get angry at myself, or I get angry at property or objects. And it can, you know, so it's complicated. It's complicated. That's why getting along with other people is not, you know, something that's always smooth, you know, because we have wounds, and sometimes we don't even realize that we have the wound because they happen to us at a very early age. And like I said, our emotional body remembers, our physical body remembers, but consciously we're, you know, we don't remember, we don't recall that, but we're reacting to it. You know, and it can be wounds such as being abandoned. You know, if you were, you know, separated from a parent when you're a baby, you know, and then you can react to something where it looks like somebody else is abandoning you. You know, if you were neglected or rejected, you know, and then you're reacting because this dynamic playing out in the present today is bumping into that wound. See, and we're not even aware that we have that wound, but it's painful. And then we react because we're not identifying the pain. We're not trying to say, where is this coming from? See, and that effort that you said that you do, you know, that's mindfulness. You know, you're paying attention to what's going on for you and you know, where you've been and where you're wanting to go. And if you don't allow yourself to do that, then you're not going to find any wounds that need healing. You know, because the whole reason why we distract ourselves is so that we don't have to feel our emotional pain. The whole reason we numb out is so that we don't have to feel that emotional pain, or we resort to addictions so we don't have to feel that emotional pain. And not feeling it doesn't heal it. Just because I haven't looked at it doesn't mean that it heals on its own, because time does not heal wounds. It's doing healing work over time, that's what heals the wound. You know, look at it on a physical level. If you got into an accident, say you were riding a bicycle, you know, and you got all, you know, in a really nasty accident, you got all these scrapes and cuts. Well, time isn't going to heal those necessarily. You know, you have to clean those wounds out. And if you leave the dirt and the in there and it's prime for infection, you know, and you still don't clean it out, then the infection can develop to gangrene. And if you still don't tend to it, then you can end up losing that limb. And if you still don't tend to it, you could end up losing your life. So that's on a physical level, and we can see that. But it happens on an emotional level to where it's painful and it's festering in our life. And it comes out in our relationships with other people. So we snap at people, or we jump down people's throats, or, you know, or we're trying to control people so that we don't get hurt, because we want everything to be our way so that I'm going to feel safe.
Yes, I agree. I'm going to pause real quick. I'm sorry. I'll be right back. I'm just going to go check on Monica real quick. I'll be right back. All right. I'm sorry. 2 seconds. I can edit it out. Axe isn't feeling well, so I just wanted to go double check on her. I thought I heard him crying. So one thing that I thought about, and this is a little more Ryan cinematic thinking, if you will, as Monica puts it. Wait, I got to figure out how I want to say it, or how I'm trying to word it. I didn't realize how quickly we can revert back to who we were at one point in life, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, and you see it all the time in movies where, like, somebody gets out of jail, right? and they're like, well, I really shouldn't go hang with these guys. You know, oh, it's just one car ride. And then something happens and they end up back in jail. And, you know, maybe that's an extreme example, but I was just, like I'm saying, I was just so, I don't know if mesmerized is the word. I'm thinking about it still today, just how quickly we all can transform back into who we used to be at one point in life. And, you know, maybe everybody is still carrying trauma that happened before they all met one another, right? And then perhaps they didn't, perhaps they, or I'll just say we, did not take the right steps or any steps at all to try and mend those issues, those wounds, that hurt, that pain. And then life just keeps piling up, right? Then suddenly you're building a family of your own. And with that comes a whole different set of problems. And I will use the word problems. We have to figure out how to strategize so that our kids can be successful and we can be successful and live to the best of our abilities at a, and you know, and it's just a lot to take in. And it really made me think about, that's what I'm trying to say. It really made me think about how life can continue to just pile things on. It can really do somebody in if you don't start working on yourself in some way, shape, or form. That's one of the many things I got out of it. It was very interesting to me.
Yeah. Well, it can accumulate. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, but the good news is that the same thing can be said for positive experiences. You know, if you've had a really positive relationship with somebody and then you don't see them for a long time, it's real easy to fall back into that dynamic that you had before, and things are clicking and you're enjoying each other's company and you're talking and interacting, and it just comes back. But it's the positive that's, you know, and you feel like, you know, the separation never happened. You know, we're still hitting like on all cylinders. And, you know, and it's, so it doesn't have to just be negative things that we revert back to. It can be positive things too.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point as I continue to talk about all these negative things is that, you know, there's definitely those groups of friends. And I'm not saying that Monica and her friends aren't one of those groups, right? But, you know, we all have seen or heard about a solid reunion where everyone finally makes the time to get together, which we know is a struggle in itself. And it's a good time talking about all the good times, the positives, talking about everything positive happening in life, talking about things that aren't so positive, and you know, then you can be there to offer your friends some sort of advice or, you know, help them stay in the moment, if that makes sense. You know, like, oh, well, you know, we're here right now. Like, why don't we, you know, just keep, it's all going to work out, right? And we know that that's not a long-term answer, that you may have to figure it out. But in the moment, if you're at an event and you all finally got together, we're not going to fix anything right here, right now, in this 2 or 3 hours or this day that we have together. You know what I mean? Let's make the best of it right here. And if anything, it'll be a break from everything else.
Yeah. Well, the analogy I used to use, Ryan, is when we're born, it's like we have this huge mansion to live in, and it's got all these rooms. And we happen to be in one particular room when an incident or trauma happens. And so rather than dealing with that incident or trauma, we leave that room and we close the door and we lock it and we don't go back into that room. And then we're going along and something else happens at another room. And instead of dealing with that, we close the door and walk away. And then as these things accumulate, as we have these incidents and traumas in various rooms in that mansion, pretty soon we're not able to access hardly any of the rooms in the mansion. It's like all we've got is this little narrow hallway and go back to one or two rooms because we never bothered to heal the traumas that we experience. We just try to move on and to move on. See, and so if we heal the wound, see, then that frees us up to be able to have full range of motion, so to speak, and to be able to access any room in the house. But if we don't, then it becomes a problem.
Have you watched Cobra Kai at all, John?
I can hardly pronounce the name again. I don't know what you're talking about.
So it's the Netflix series that follows. It's a series that's a long-term sequel to the first three Karate Kids, right? And okay. Did you ever see the first Karate Kid? Do you remember it?
Yeah.
Okay. So
wax on, wax off.
Wax on, wax off. Mr. Miyagi, Banzai, all that fun stuff. You know, at first when they announced that it was going to be happening, and this is years ago at this point, maybe, oh goodness, 5 years ago now, you kind of just like, oh, okay, like, what's this going to be like? Are they going to destroy the legacy of the Karate Kid? Are they going to destroy my childhood? They have done an excellent job of showing how, one, we don't know everybody's story in life, and two, just how life can change so quickly for everybody. But the one thing that sticks out is they do a very good job of showing that, you know, Johnny was, what we saw in the first film was Johnny was this good-looking, athletic, rich kid. He had a car, had a dirt bike. He went to the cool karate school. You know, he had the cool gi, right? Everything is going well for Johnny. Well, in like the opening 5 or 10 minutes, you see that Johnny's mom was actually married to Johnny's stepdad, right? It wasn't Johnny's biological dad. So that's one thing that can create an issue, right? Let's just say some confusion. Mm-hmm. He was verbally abusive. He had these super high, unrealistic expectations for Johnny. And, you know, it's also, you see Johnny as a boy overhearing his stepdad and mom arguing, like, right? So Daniel was this poor kid from Reseda, as they put it. And Daniel ends up owning a chain of successful car dealerships. And when they meet up finally, you know, of course they have the back and forth banter. Everything was good for you, Johnny. You know, and it's like, well, you didn't even know what was going on in Johnny's life. None of us did, right? From the perspective that we saw, it was all about, you know, Daniel LaRusso. But I thought that was really cool, really important to show that, you know, on the outside, it looks like Johnny had it all together. But because of his past wounds and decisions he made in life, he ended up with a son he doesn't see, with he had him with a woman he doesn't get along with, and she has issues of her own. He can't hold a job. He's drinking all night. And they do a really good job of showing how the childhood and teenage trauma led to where he was at in life. Mm-hmm. And they actually continue that trend with a lot of the characters, but just a really good job of showing how, one, you don't know what everybody's going through, and two, it can be smoke and mirrors, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of times we try to pretend, you know, I mean, so allegedly, I don't spend a lot of time on Facebook. I don't usually put things on, you know, once in a while I'll read somebody's post that I know. But, you know, sometimes people put up that everything's hunky-dory because they're trying to project an image, almost like they're, you know, running for election or something. And it's not necessarily like that. See, but you brought up a phenomenon that happens to a lot of families, and that's a step-parent. You know, when you have biological children, and you know, when we have a biological child, there's a phenomenon that, you know, in the bonding and things, that the chemistry, you know, where you will put your life on the line to save your child, and it's a wiring that nature gave us so that we can allow children to be safe and to grow up so that we don't end as a species. Because if we didn't care about our children, we let them die, and then we get old and we die, and then there's no human beings anymore. So it's a wiring to perpetuate the existence of the race. But that comes about for your children. It doesn't come about easily for somebody else's children. And it takes a special effort for a person to make that child that is not theirs, but they married into it, so to speak, or even if you didn't get married, you know, you have a relationship, you know, to treat that child that's not yours as though it is yours. It takes a special person. You make an effort to do that. It doesn't come as easily as when it's your own biological child. And so what also happens is that sometimes, you know, it's like, hey, do you need that person around? You know, can we just have time by ourselves? You know, this person's always around because they're treating them like they're a person. They're not seeing that, no, that's their child. And there's a bond there that they're going to, you know, if they're in a healthy place, you know, that they're going to keep for the rest of, you know, their lives, because the child needs that certainly into their adult years. And, you know, it's just a phenomenon that the person who's, it's not their child, you know, has a hard time connecting to. And so, because all they want is the partner, you know, they want to be with the partner, you know, and sometimes people do that with the person's family that they marry into. Do you have to spend all that time with your family? You know, you're with your mom all the time, or you're with your dad all the time, you know, and, you know, because we want that person all to ourselves. And, you know, that person, you know, their family is important and it plays a role, you know, and that's what makes the whole concept of in-laws so challenging, is because, you know, I'm not as quick to bond with my in-laws, and my partner isn't necessarily as quick to bond with their in-laws, you know, because we didn't have that growing up since we were children like we do with our own families. And so that's what makes the dynamic of, you know, mixing families interesting. And then when you add, you know, blended families, you know, my children, your children, our children, that complicates the package. And it can bump into wounds and all kinds of dynamics. And, you know, that's why life is so full of interest like it is. You know, there's never a dull moment.
No, there is never a dull moment. That's for sure. So, yeah, no, as we head towards the end of the show and we start wrapping things up, I just, you know, I told Monica, you know, they rent a place in the Poconos for the weekend. And so they rent a place in the Poconos for the weekend. Last time they rented the place in Lock Haven, some little remote area. And, you know, this time all the girls started talking about things that are going on in their lives or in their past. And, you know, as we talked about with Monica, some things collided from in the past. And I looked at Monica and I was like, gotta admit, starting to sound a little Stephen Kingy with whatever keeps going on up in these houses. It's like that book. Remember it? It was, they were childhood friends and they reunited, and then the you know, there was the Pennywise was the clown, but usually in Stephen King, not all, but there's a few Stephen King books where it's like a group of people going through X, Y, and Z, and you know, their mix of stories create for an interesting dynamic. But yeah, I just wanted to do a small segment on what transpired this past week. And I know we kind of got off on quite a few different topics trying to talk about it, but yeah, that was the basis of the story, talking about how, you know, even though we continue to progress through our lives and grow, and that doesn't mean that we're not growing with certain people. Monica's, you know, stays in touch with some of these girls and sees them quite a few times throughout the year. But, you know, when you're in that setting where everyone was together at one point in, you know, each other's lives, suddenly, without thinking, you just teleport back to the first time you all met each other and the few years that followed. And just very interesting to me. You know, I don't have a tight circle of friends like that. I don't have a circle of friends where we grew up together. And, you know, when we get together, we're still the same person, if that makes sense. One of my mm-hmm. better friends, when we get together, we don't have a lot in common anymore. Right. We're very cordial and we're still close and we'll reminisce and talk about things that transpired back when we were kids. But I don't have a set of friends where we stayed close throughout the years and shared things like getting married and having kids and baby showers and meeting up every so often. I don't have that, right? So I don't understand it. So it's always very interesting to me. And this time in particular stood out. So I definitely wanted to discuss that with you.
Yeah. Well, you see, there's also the grandparent phenomenon. So, you know, the grandparent comes over, spends time with the kids and they love them. And then, okay, now I'm going home. And, you know, because it's, you know, their energy is just too much, you know, I can't keep up or whatever, you know. But when the kid is there on a full-time basis, you know, it can become very stressful. Well, it's also true with relationships. You know, you can interact with friends and you're there, you see them for a couple hours and you do things. And then, okay, so I go back home, you know, and get back into my life. But when you're living with somebody for a whole weekend, you're there 24/7, you know, 48, 72 hours. And, you know, all kinds of things can get bumped into and all kinds of wounds can get bumped into and rubbed. And, you know, and then it comes out, you know, how we deal with our emotional pain, you know, becomes, you know, something we act out. And, you know, I think as a society, we don't do enough to teach people how to identify and heal emotional wounds so that we can heal them and not keep bumping into them and then reacting from pain when it gets bumped into. But we go around in society bumping into each other's wounds. And see, because emotional wounds don't show like physical wounds do. I can look at somebody and say, oh, okay, they got their leg in a cast, you know. But, you know, when somebody has an emotional wound, you don't see it. You end up interacting with them and then you bump into them. Oh, they got a wound about their dad. You know, I was just talking about my dad and boy, look how they have a bass wound about a relationship. And I bumped in, you know, and they come out and very often they come out as pain that gets turned to anger, either that they directed me or they directed themselves or they just take off. And so that's what makes things so interesting.
Random thing to think about. I always think about, you know, tactics, if you will, sincere tactics. If I upset somebody, if I said something in a conversation and I didn't realize something, like, for example, I worked with a young man who his dad passed away from COVID at the peak of the pandemic. Right. And I remember I was talking with a few of our coworkers and he was, you know, getting settled in a couple of feet away. And I was like, you know, I can't wait for this pandemic to be over. You know, sometimes I feel like they're lying to us, right? I'm not even going to lie. I'm being transparent. I was on a rant, right? I remember it was a very difficult time in the pandemic. It probably peak pandemic for all of us. So we all were going crazy. And I look off in the distance and I just saw him, like, you know, bite his lip and he just had this really upset look on his face. And I remember I was like, ah, right. You know what I mean? Like, and it's one of those things where you always have to, you know, even if it's the way you feel, there's maybe things that you just shouldn't say in public or in general. Right. just kind of keep it to yourself and work it out in your head. But I remember I made it a point to say, like, you know, hey, I'm sorry, man. Listen, I'm not even going to try to justify what I just said. I apologize for what I said. And, you know, and he could have said, well, is that how you really feel? To which I probably would have had to own up and said, yeah, if I'm being honest, that's how I feel. I understand you lost, you know, a loved one to COVID. So I apologize that, I just apologize. I'm really sorry. Let me know if there's anything I can do to make up for it. Right. And I'm just saying something right now, but the point is that I always feel it's important to be on the offense when somebody is on the defense, if that makes sense. Not even try to be like, hey, listen, it was just a joke, or we're just having a conversation.
Do you mean offense or being proactive?
Maybe proactive, but you know, I don't think there's to wrap up this final thought, you know, Monica, as she displayed and said, she really, she went into defense mode. Well, if you all have something to say something, but I guess the final thought as we continue to head out is it's okay to say you were wrong. It's okay to say, if I made you feel that way, I apologize. It was years ago.
Go ahead.
Something years of that ago. Sort. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but see, what you're saying is true. It's okay to say it, but see, not everybody can do it.
Right.
And the reason
that's true. Yeah.
The reason that what I've found in the years that I've done this work is the thing that makes a person not able to do it is that when you get down to it, they're not able to give themselves the "are you a cat" that they need and deserve, you know, their own meat and potatoes of their own meal, you know, that respect, understanding, acceptance, caring, appreciation, and trust, because they're afraid. And so they're not giving it to themselves. And so they're still looking to get it from other people. And if I tell you I made a mistake, you might kick me off the team, so to speak. Because, you know, if I say I dropped the ball, you might say, okay, you're not playing anymore because we can't count on you. And then that means, in essence, that I'm going to lose your respect and your understanding, acceptance, caring, appreciation, and trust. And if I lose yours, I'm really in the dark.
Right.
See, and so I'm afraid of losing it. So I have to say no. And, you know, and there's some people in this world that have risen to positions of power in, you know, around the world that will never say that they're wrong. They see it as a sign of weakness, but it's not weakness to say that you're wrong. It takes strength to say that you've made a mistake. Doesn't take any strength to lie or to say, I didn't do anything wrong. See, that doesn't take strength. That's just being stubborn and trying to put your will on the other person.
Nope. No, I agree. And before I get twisted up in my words and thoughts again, that's all I have to say for this evening. I guess my final thought and words of positivity would be, work things out with people. No, I'm just kidding. I guess my whole takeaway from this is that, you know, there are things to work through with. There might be things to work through with, you know, numerous people in our lives. And maybe we offended people and we didn't know it. You know, we may have been 18, 19, 20 years old in college and we behaved a completely different way. Maybe some of us are still the same person we were back then. But there's always room for growth and there's still time to make things right, so long as that person is around. So, you know, don't hold grudges, look to give yourself that, are you a cat, and just look to make things better. You don't have to head back to the college dorm room.
Yeah. Well, my end note of trying to be positive, it's my problem is, and this is true for all of us, you know, my problem is not that somebody else doesn't love me. My problem is that I don't love myself. Because if I love myself and somebody else doesn't love me, oh, well, sorry that you don't like that about me, but, you know, I like me. I love me. But if I'm not loving me and somebody else doesn't like me, then that is going to be really painful. And so that's why it's so important for us to learn how to be loving to ourselves. And then once we're able to do that, then we're better able to be loving to other people, because we have plenty of love now. You know, I've got all the love I need. Here, let me invite you to dinner and you can share in my love. But just remember that even though I think I'm handing them a plate of meat and potatoes, all I can really give them is gravy. They have to cook their own meat and potatoes, ability to love themselves.
And there it is, ladies, gentlemen, boys, and girls, as we continue to wrap up this episode. But this will be our final for this episode. Right. John, how can people reach you if they want to get in touch with you?
With a long arm.
An airplane, a train.
Supportivealliance.com is the website, and contact@supportivealliance is the email.
Sorry, I'm just laughing because I just had a flashback to group when I was like 20 years old and we were working with a young man, and he had to figure out how he was going to get to work. And, you know, I don't want to take it. Trains and planes, and to which you replied, well, you don't need to take trains and planes and automobiles, you know, we can figure out public transportation. But I don't know, for some reason I remember you, me, and everybody else in the group thought that even though this young man was working through something, his delivery was comedic, and I remember he managed to laugh as well. So I guess we can all find the light in the darkness in some way, shape, or form if we are able to look hard enough. All right.
Yeah. That they're both there simultaneously.
All right. Before any more final moments, thank you everybody for listening. We'll see you next time. Take care.
Just kidding.
He had me going. Bye bye, everybody.
Tune in next week to find out.
All right.